order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
It's time for Legally Served with Attorney Franz Borghardt.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I'll allow it.
An open and honest discussion about how the law applies to the headlines.
You not only insult me, but you insult the integrity of this court.
The defendant is not guilty.
The defense is wrong.
But somebody in this courtroom is.
I'm being charged with a crime.
A trial by court martial.
Is that what this is? I'm being charged with a crime?
Legally Served with Attorney Franz Borghardt.
Don't tell me what I know and don't know. I know the law.
Yeah, it's time for a little Legally Served. We welcome in Attorney Franz Borghardt. Franz, what's happening, man?
You're welcome.
All right, that's where we're starting this morning. We got a couple of different stories to cover. I don't know in which order we want to do this because there's three stories on the table. We break this down into three different individual segments. So, tell you what, why don't we go ahead and start with legally, can the governor remove scholarships from people who do not stand for the national anthem?
No, sir.
Okay.
Let me take a step back. Constitutionally, that's not going to fly. Sounds good. Great soundbite, yeah. Right? Great, fantastic soundbite. Never mind the fact that only one of the teams present at that particular series actually was present for the national anthem.
Well,
from a constitutional standpoint, First Amendment, no. You cannot deprive a pecuniary property interest based on failure to stand for the national anthem. Okay? More to the point, I think in this case, there wasn't a deliberate not standing for the national anthem, right?
So that's what gets called into question.
Okay.
Coach Mulkey said after the game, she had no idea when the anthem was being played. However, they haven't been out for the national anthem at all this year.
Right. So and this was nothing this new.
This is something where they had a national audience, and it was the national audience's first time to say, hey, they're not out there for the national anthem. Now, that being said, here's where I'm at on this. I don't understand why the national anthem isn't the last thing done before tip-off. The national anthem at a women's college basketball game is played about 15 minutes before tip-off, which, if you're going through your pregame routine, you should be in the locker room right then.
So men's basketball, that's kind of – they're out there already. Everybody's out there for the national anthem, right?
And then they go back to the locker room and come back for the starting lineups?
Correct.
Okay, so then it's very arbitrary as to when you wrap up your warm-ups. But there's another problem with this as well, Franz, and I realize I'm taking us away from the legal aspect of it, but if you're playing the national anthem right then – how many people are in their seats for the national anthem, and how many people are standing in line for nachos?
Correct. So here's the bigger picture. Can the governor use his governor leverage with a conservative legislature to pass legislation that would somehow take away scholarships based on this? Sure, he could do that. It would be unconstitutional.
So the law would be deemed unconstitutional, but also he holds the power to appoint people to the Board of Regents.
Correct.
Which would have sway over that as well.
I get that he's patriotic as F. And normally my gripe about him when he was an attorney general was stay in your lane, right? I get it. He's governor now. He gets a lot bigger lane than he had before. To the victor goes the spoils. My point is I don't know that he can do it. I think it's unconstitutional. And then the other piece is I think that law would require some kind of intentional defiance of like, hey, if your coach tells you need to be in the locker room during the national anthem, you're not intentionally not standing. And we don't know what was happening in the locker room, right?
Well, and then there's this flip side of this where it's just not going to happen simply because, let's just say LSU football. They're in the locker room for the national anthem, I'm not mistaken.
Are they?
So I'm across the street. Okay. During the football games, I'm producer for the radio end, but if I'm not mistaken, and I might have had my timeline wrong on this one yesterday, but if I'm not mistaken, band comes out, they do the pregame salute, they'll do the LSU cheer on both sides of the stadium, they'll play the alma mater, they'll play the national anthem, and then the band will line up along the goalposts for the team to run out after the anthem. Again, if I'm wrong on that timeline, let me know. We're live on Facebook every single day.
Well, let me say this. This is how asinine I feel this topic is. This is like me saying, the governor is an elected official whose first act as governor was to swear to uphold the law, the Constitution of the United States and the Louisiana Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Or Louisiana Constitution. And by doing by suggesting about taking away scholarships for failing to exercise free speech.
Hang on.
He is urinating on the Constitution.
We got to pause right there. Here's news. Attorney Franz Borghardt in for Legally Served. I don't want to spend too much more time on this national anthem topic, Franz.
Can we stay on LSU for a second?
We can, but just to kind of put a button on the national anthem thing, it's like, I want to know, when was the first time they sang the national anthem in a ball game? Like, was it even on purpose? Like, because that, like, when Abner Doubleday invented baseball or when Dr. James Naismith invented basketball, it wasn't an institution from the start, right?
I have a
Somewhere along the way, they just added it.
I have a suspicion that if you're riled up about this, you probably weren't a fan of LSU women's basketball in the first place.
No. So there are a few people who have been riled up about it the whole season.
Okay.
Which I think it's a bigger problem with where the timing of it is in basketball. I don't understand why you would be on the court right then, especially when you look at football as a comparison. So anyway, keeping it with LSU.
Big settlement.
Big settlement.
We don't know what the big settlement was.
But we know it's big.
Huge.
Allegedly all parties involved are happy. Is that about right?
Actually, in good settlements, they're generally all unhappy.
I think the word that was used was amicable.
That's okay. They got some money in their pocket. It's going jingling-a-ling. The cases are resolved. Mm-hmm. LSU is shown to take these cases serious. New, gentler, softer, shinier LSU. We take this stuff more serious now than we did apparently back then.
Okay, let's pause it so I can give the background of the story. LSU has settled the lawsuit that was filed against the university that alleged sexual misconduct and assault by LSU football players. The suit was filed back in 2021 by a group of 10 women. This was covered in the Hush Blackwell report that came out along the way. Right. So we're finally to the point of where we're seeing the settling of the lawsuit. Okay, dive back in. Sorry, I cut you off there.
So, all cases settled. We don't know how much money. But, you know, one of the factors that go into settling things is not just the money that you're settling for, but the cost of defending.
Yeah.
Like, what does it cost to defend a giant, lawsuit with multiple defendants that are all claiming sexual assault and that LSU basically, pun intended, dropped the ball, didn't stand up for them, so to speak, and the victims. And now, I was asked yesterday, did Hush Blackwell really change to anything? Well, yeah, it did, actually. The way LSU is addressing these issues seems to be more attentive, more deliberate. Now, if I'm not mistaken, these cases were more about buried sexual assault, right?
Okay.
We don't know the number. We don't know the figure. Amicable, I guess, implies everybody's friendly, happy.
At least they walk away not mad.
No, they're probably still mad.
Yeah.
And by the way, in a civil suit, all you can do is give money, right?
Yes.
That's what a civil suit is. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody is, Nobody gets their hand slapped, It's
the quote in WBRZ's article says, while the exact terms of the settlement were not released, court records from last week said that LSU and the students, quote within a quote, have settled all of their claims and have agreed to amicably resolve this dispute. So.
Now, Troy brings up a good point. Or Galen does, actually. How can a settlement deal be private given that LSU is a public school?
That is a good question. And by the way, Galen's making that point over on our Facebook live feed, which we are live on Facebook every single morning. If you would like to contribute to the conversation, we are always dialed in on it over there. So let's ask that question. How can the settlement be private if LSU is a public institution?
I would imagine that there is some kind of public records request that you could make that may be excluding settlements in civil cases, or alternatively, LSU's insurance is settling this, and LSU's insurance may not be covered by the public-private issue.
Well, does it matter which direction the money is headed? Because the settlement is going
paying the money
from LSU to private citizens. You're talking about 10 people who have made sexual assault allegations.
Well, that's, but generally,
so wouldn't the recipients need to be kept private for their amounts?
So generally, there's that. But generally, a civil settlement is generally not an admission of wrongdoing.
Right.
Like, we're giving you this money, but we're not saying we did anything wrong. Mistakes mm-hmm. were made, but we didn't do anything wrong. Number two, generally they're confidential in nature. That's part of the process. And yeah, you're like, it's kind of like keeping the identity of somebody who wins a lottery ticket kind of concealed. Like, we don't, like, although we know these quote-unquote victims, I don't need to know how much they made. I don't need to know how much they got paid out on this.
Right.
I mean, and I think it's a good thing that they settled the case.
So, with the case being settled and the boost into the Title IX office and all the light that was shed on everything and a complete turnover in administration, both in the athletic department and, for that matter, over at the university itself, can we finally start to close the book on the hunting of LSU?
No.
Because I think there's – no, but you see where I'm going with this. There's like a bigger issue here is every day there's another article. Every time you turn around, it seems like somebody else has LSU in their crosshairs for one reason or another.
Ask LSU women's basketball.
That's what I'm saying.
Ask Kim Mulkey if LSU's right. out of the crosshairs.
Right. Now you had the Washington Post spent 2 years to write an article that was already in her book.
I got to tell you, I this has nothing to do with the law. But, like, am I the only one who's like, I don't really feel like I should have a say in the relationship between her and her father? And if more to the point, I don't feel like I should have a say on when he gets forgiven or not forgiven for anything he may or may not have done. I feel like it is none of my business.
Right? And
like
that feels like it should be pretty cut and dry.
Right.
Because my relationship with my parents is nobody else's business. Your relationship with your parents is nobody else's business.
Well, what does affect me in my world in picking juries is there is now this heightened sense of things are my business that aren't my business. Like, look at our culture as a human race. We pushed a princess who has cancer. We pushed her into disclosing the cancer because people were like being basically shaming her weight fluctuations and whatnot. Like, we feel like we are entitled to things that we're by no means entitled to, which goes full circle to, is LSU still in the hot crosshairs? LSU's an easy target. LSU's a big, soft, easy target.
But, like, they've cleansed everything, right? Everything has been washed. The sunlight has disinfected all of it.
Has it?
One would hope. I don't want to be the one in the horror movie that says, we finally got away, only to have Jason Voorhees right around the corner, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be that guy, but at the same time, though, it's, what was it, comedian Bill Burr? Says, like, it looks like the Me Too movement is dying down. I think we got everybody. I think they got everybody. I think all the allegations are, you know, if they're not all out of the wash yet,
we
then
love
they
a good old-fashioned, we love a good old-fashioned witch hunt. Especially when it's somebody that's winning, a success story.
Yeah.
We love a good, now look, Hush Blackwell's a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
There's some stuff that came out in that report that was like, right? Mm-hmm. We were all kind of like, okay, that doesn't look bueno. That's no bueno.
Right.
Look, settlements are a good thing. We don't want everything going to trial, right? Some things need to be tried, but not everything does.
Of course. We got less than a minute to go before break. So within that last minute, let me ask you this. Everything that was in the Hush Blackwell report, that should at least be over with, right? I mean, this settlement is 10 of people's allegations, but everything else that was in there, it's either come to pass or not at this point.
Correct. And the proof's in the pudding.
Yes. Right?
Are we going to continue to see sexual assault issues on campus? Yes. How are they handled is the new question.
Exactly. Legally served with attorney Franz Borchardt continuing right now. Hey, Franz.
What's up?
Guess what?
What's that?
Coming up Friday, Rocco's going to be in the house.
I'm sorry, Rocco or Rocca?
Rocco is good. No. We're not doing that misconfusion right there. Rocco is going to be in the house. I'm
crashing that party. What time is it?
So you probably need to just to eat meat because it's going to be our first non-Lenten Friday in a long time.
Okay.
So he'll be in for the 8 o'clock hour.
I'm in. I'm going to do carpool. Yeah. And then, no carpool this week.
No carpool this week. How about that? I know. I want to hate myself afterwards. That's how much I want to eat.
Hey, Rocco, I got some news for you. Oh. You know how, Dan, I got a problem with you.
Sorry, random commercial just dropping in right there. coming up Friday. Yeah, we're going to have to.
Heard the phrase.
I want the Crescent City connection this week.
Rocco and I
haven't talked about what he's making yet, but the Crescent City connection is the hot roast beef, ham, and turkey.
I want a sandwich with a whole bunch of meat on it.
That's what this is. This is all the meats.
Preferably with French fries.
Give me all the meats.
Preferably with French fries. Preferably with a gravy.
Fries and gravy might be on the side. All right, let's dive back in. We only got a couple minutes left here. A former East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office deputy was formally charged with child pornography and indecent behavior on Tuesday after his September arrest. 45-year-old Joseph Pizzolatto was booked with one count of pornography involving a juvenile and one count of indecent behavior with a juvenile. Pizzolatto was fired from the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office after 6 years following his September 15th arrest. Arrest documents from last year say he sent inappropriate text messages, including images, with a 15-year-old girl. He voluntarily handed over his phone during the interview. That, as a criminal defense attorney, that's going to be my first question.
Okay, so...
I'm sorry, voluntarily handed over a cell phone number, which matched the number of the text messages on the other side. Same thing, though, right? It's, if you hand over your cell phone number and it matches the number that has the texts on the receiving end.
So, hiding in plain sight aside, some people want to get caught. And I suspect that this guy, I mean, you ever seen criminal recklessness that you're like, this guy just looks like he wanted to get caught. Now, he hasn't hired the law offices of Franz Borchardt.
Yeah.
And if he did that, he'd be innocent in a way that nobody's ever been innocent before.
100%. I get that.
But that being said, I'm reminded of this clip from the movie Shawshank Redemption where the guy goes, I could be a friend to you. That is what I'm thinking this guy's future is.
Okay.
He's going to, I mean, cop caught soliciting a minor.
Yeah.
Caught soliciting a minor. Do not pass go to go directly to jail. Unless, of course, Franz Borchardt represents you.
Well, I mean, he sent text messages that I can't even read half of them on the air.
Right.
One of them says, I got to remember you not 18, LOL.
Oh,
it's a little self-incriminating, huh?
Save something for your lawyer to work with.
It's one that says you're beautiful and curvy.
I mean, he didn't say, I love people under 18. But, I mean, he might as well have.
Delete all that crap, LOL.
He texted that?
Yeah. He texted, I'd go to jail.
I feel like this is not the first time we've talked about this guy.
No, we talked about it back in September when it first happened.
Yeah.
But now the charges have actually been filed.
Yeah.
Took
a minute.
So, yeah.
Took a minute.
Yeah, it did. Is that normal in a case like this?
I don't know. I don't know what's normal in a case like this. This case is anything but normal. I would say that on sex offenses, you have a wide berth of when you can bring the charges forward. The question is what safeguards were in place while they were investigating this guy to prevent this guy from doing it to somebody else.
Okay.
That's the real question is, I don't want the DA's office moving haphazardly and hastily. I do want them moving deliberately, but what were the safeguards in place? Now, to be sure, if he was doing this to other people while not being arrested, while these investigations were going on, we probably would have heard about that as well.
Oh, almost certainly. Almost certainly. But yeah, arrested on September 15th, out on bond September 18th. On September 25th, according to the WBRZ version of the story, deputies found a video on Pizzolatto's phone of a teenager dancing topless.
Yeah. Not good. He may be trying to work out some kind of plea agreement.
That's where I was going to go with this is...
A little jail time.
You think a little jail time here?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, when you have law enforcement guys doing this kind of activities, not represented by Franz Borchardt. 58-50. Yeah. A little jail time.
A little jail time. All right. Well, so when it comes to the actual charges, though, one count of pornography involving a juvenile and one count of indecent behavior with a juvenile.
So that carries, child pornography carries mandatory jail time, remember?
Yes.
And in fact, carries more jail time than the indecent behavior with the juvenile.
Okay.
So he'll probably be looking at somewhere in the magnitude of five years.
Okay.
He'll have to register as a sex offender. We'll tag him, so we'll be able to keep an eye on him. He may get more time because he's a cop, or was a cop.
Yeah.
Hiding in plain sight.
All right. So as this story evolves, we're going to have to pick it up from there. Right now, though, you got to get over to Court TV. So he's attorney Franz Borghardt. We always appreciate our Wednesday chats with Franz. We call it Legally Served. We'll be right back at it next Wednesday.